Excellent. Let's actually get started. So welcome everybody. This is the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices monthly community call. And these are typical monthly community call content, what we're going to cover today. So this is the February 2016, and we're going to go through the individual details around the February 2016 release. Also slightly, well, there will be demos. We're going to talk about slightly the future plans and some of the other topics as well. My name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a senior program manager in Office 365 engineering, or in a CAT team to be precise, but that's part of the engineering as well. We will have a lot of people arriving slightly late. That's relatively typical. The recording has started, and we're going to do double recordings this time because last time we actually missed, there were some technical issues which failed the recording. I do blame hardware on that one. There cannot be anything wrong within the software. Anyway, so let's actually get started. So today there will be three demos. We're going to talk about unit testing, what we do in the PNP and how it actually works within the Office 365. We're going to have a demo about the graph, a sample, or one of the samples done by Paolo Pialorsi. And then we're going to talk about the changes within the PNP provisioning engine. But let's get actually going. There's some typical slides which I wanted to go through quickly for the new audience, which have not been necessarily on these calls before. And then there's the monthly highlights. So what's actually new within the PNP, where we're heading, and who has been contributing during this month. So, quickly, just the just a quick introduction for people, because there's always new people in a call. If you do AKAMS Office Dev PNP, you will land at the dev.office.com site, and that's a one page which will have all the needed information about the patterns and practices guidance. One of the things I'm gonna show you that in a second as well, or at least in the slides, there you will find from that location also the code sample or solution sample search tool, which will help you to find what's relevant for you. Because one of the things where we're getting all the time feedback is that people are having hard time to find what's relevant for me from the GitHub repositories. And to be honest, you don't have to go to the GitHub repositories to find what's relevant for you. There's tools for you to use. In general, the PNP is all about code samples, solutions, reusable modules, guidance, documentation. And we do have actually two official case studies. So we did have a Blue Meteor as a previous one, and Volvo Cars is actually a new one, which will go live relatively soon. So some of the Blue Meteor is an ISV building intranet solution on top of the Office 365 using the PNP guidance, well, aligning with the PNP guidance. And Volvo Cars is one of the enterprise customers who've done the transformation to the, let's say, Office 365 intranets and collaboration. PNP is not just about SharePoint. It's absolutely more and more about all of the other aspects of the Office 365 as well. So we're moving into the Office Graph, client-side development, and all of this stuff more and more in the future. This is a one slider. Just for everybody to have a one single slide. So if you're interested on any of the resources and assets, what we have in the PNP patterns and practices guidance, this is essentially one slide which have all the relevant links between the different topics and between different resources. We do know that there's a lot of material out there, and even the AKMS address, which is landing to that one page, is extremely long. So sooner or later, we will have a multiple pages and in the dev.office.com, where we're able to actually give you guys more and girls more easily content and samples and relevant guidance to help you to do whatever is needed to be done in Office 365 or also in SharePoint development. So the PNP is also for SharePoint 2013, SharePoint 2016 development, and also actually for IT Pro stuff. So more and more relatively soon, we'll start releasing scripts and tools for SharePoint 2016, which will hopefully help the on-premises people to do A, proper development, and B, proper administration of their server farms as well. So we're kind of extending to the IT Pro and administrative side as well. Some typical slides which we always go through, how to find the PNP samples or guidance. So the GitHub is extremely difficult or might be extremely difficult to find what's relevant for you. And therefore, we do, if you go to dev.office.com, resources, patterns and practices, and there are samples/guidance, and there's a search tool where you can actually, in the search text box, you can, for example, say branding, event receiver, or whatever, and it will show you the samples and guidance relevant for what you're searching for. Really, really great tool, which will help you to find what are you actually looking for. Some other stuff related on the PNP, the PNP webcasts. We started this back in October, and we've been doing this every single week. So for the past month, there's kind of a 5 new webcasts. There's the property-backed trick for client-side object model to enable additional configurations, relatively technical webcast. There's the help desk application with Microsoft Graph, which is showing how to take advantage of the Microsoft Graph and what's actually the whole idea of the Microsoft Graph. Really great solution, which is available for download from the code samples as well. There's a nice webcast with me and Bert and Irvin around the SharePoint feature framework versus remote provisioning and why we are saying that the feature framework isn't necessarily the right thing to do or right way to provision your assets within a SharePoint in on-premises or in Office 365. So that is a really great webcast on those details. There's the OAuth and OpenID Connect for Office 365 developer explains what is the future. Because more and more what we're going to do in the future within Office 365 is that we don't concentrate just on SharePoint. We obviously concentrate on all of the other services within Office 365, and to be able to access them, you'll be using the OAuth and OpenID with an Azure AD option. And then the last one, which was released actually yesterday, today is Tuesday, yes, yesterday, is an introduction to the Microsoft Graph for Office 365 developer, which is kind of a phase two, or it follows up on the previous week's webcast around how do we take advantage of the Microsoft Graph. And Paolo is going to demonstrate that in practice later today within the call. So great resource, there's presentations for all of those are available for download as well. Those are videos which are usually 30 minutes. We're always targeting 30 minutes, but I would say majority of them are more than 30 minutes because it's superbly difficult to actually keep the discussions in a really, really short time frame. All of the presentations and what we do, including this one, which you're seeing right now, is available for download from the docs.com/office-dev-pnp. So you can use these presentations or the training materials over there or whatever is available there any way you want. There's some graphics, documentation, and so on. The PNP graphics presentation is a good example. It actually has been already downloaded more than 3,000 times. I haven't updated that number since the last month call. One of the things what we wanted to also give you guys and girls a heads up, we will do a public survey around the PNP, the patterns and practices guidance, because we work well. The PNP is coordinated by Microsoft, and I do as an example, and Bert works for the Microsoft. And one of the things when we're working within the US Trian company is that we need to show some metrics, because we need to justify the existence of this program by showing that it's actually bringing value. So we will do a public survey, and we're hoping that you who are joining this call, you hopefully are happy with the content what we're providing. And yes, we know that we can improve some of the content as well, but we really want to really want your input for the future of the PNP. So this should be coming up within, how would I put it, probably within 2 weeks. You'll see it in Twitter, you'll see it in the dev.office.com and all the different social media channels. A small reminder, please mute yourself while joining the call, so there's no background noise until in the end if we have time, just to avoid any background noise. Cool. One of the things what I just added on the slides 2 minutes ago before the call started, this is a relatively hectic slide, but a few pointers around the PNP, because this seems to be highly confusing related on the supportability. Just to be clear, the PNP guidance and samples are created by Microsoft and the community. So we're doing this together as a open source community driven program. The BMP guidance samples are maintained by Microsoft and the community. Should have actually added there that one there as well. BMP uses supported and recommended techniques. So anything what you find in the BMP repository is actually valid and validated by engineering. We don't have any, let's say, guidances out there which would not be supported. BMP implementation are reviewed and approved by engineering, so anything goes there is actually reviewed and approved. BMP is an open source program done by community for the community. That's a really good pointer to remind as well. So we are highly reliant on the community contributions. And what we mean with that one is that majority of the, for example, even the core team members are doing this, well, all of us are doing this on the site. This is not our day job. We're doing this for you to help the community to learn the stuff. So this is not a product. There's no full-time employees in the BNP guidance and no full-time members or people getting paid by creating the BNP guidance for you. BNP is not a product. It's not supported from product perspective by Premier Support or other official product channels. It is absolutely supported by Microsoft from a technology perspective. But it's an open source program, so there's no Premier support for that one from that perspective. So it's a similar way as it is an open source program like, well, any other open source initiative. Good, just a reminder on that one, and we got it actually also recorded. Few things related on month statistics, and these are obviously really important for us to show the value of the BNP and the interest of the BNP for our leadership in the Microsoft, so we're able to continue doing this. What's really great to see is that the interest on the BNP is back on the track. And it's again growing like we were expecting. The small pump on the January is actually due to holiday season, because between the December and early January, people are quite often taking holidays, and that's the reason why we didn't have that many unique visitors within our repositories. Now, during the January, those numbers are back on the track like they used to be, and growing like we can see from the charts. The GitHub forks and pull requests are growing as well, quite significantly. And that's a summary of individual GitHub repositories, what we have under the BNP brand. And also the core component, NuGet packages, NuGet package download is growing quite heavily as well. So great to see the interest, and these are, the charts are really important for us, like mentioned, to justify the existence of the program in overall. So what did you do in the February release? There's few additional samples in the general BNP sample repository. So there's the Outlook Notifications API, not the Outlook Notification API, Web API. Great example, which is actually showing how to subscribe Outlook notifications using the webhook methods, which are available and using the Microsoft Graph technologies. So super, super powerful sample showing how to make that happen. And it has a UI and all of that to control those settings. We have a Microsoft Graph Office 365 generic, which is a nice, really nice sample. Paolo is going to show that one later today, which is showing how to do basic typical operations within the Microsoft Graph towards calendar, contacts, files, unified groups, and users. I personally wrote a small sample that was written for Helsinki Hackathon. Microsoft Graph Office 365 simple mail and files, and that's using a simple ASP.NET MVC application to query emails and files, and it's also using the Office UI fabric to present stuff in a consistent way. Then there's two kind of an interesting, slightly different kind of samples or content which we released. So there's the JDP remediation CSAM console, which we probably should have named slightly differently. But that's really for mitigating, for example, when you are moving from the FTC to the adding model. So if you're planning to, for example, transform your on-premises deployment from the full trust code to the adding model, that console application is giving you additional tools and remote operations how to do that. And kind of a related on that one is the feature activation blocker. So if you are actually moving from full trust code to the adding model implementation, and you deactivate, let's say, the full-source code features within your site, if that's within your plans, you can use that full-source code solution to block reactivation of those full-source code features. And both of these solutions are something that we're using in our day-to-day projects. So we do work with a large customers, helping on them to do the transformation to the adding model, and both of them are actually outcome from that day-to-day work that we're doing. And obviously there were multiple updated samples, but we right now, for example, for SharePoint side, we didn't do nothing that much on the adding model and new contributions, because I wouldn't say that we're full. We're interested on interesting samples still, but there's quite nice coverage from a SharePoint adding model perspective already in our catalog. What else? On the February release, a lot of changes in a core. Well, the majority of the changes within the core are more on the BMP provisioning engine side. So there was a significant changes done on the BMP provisioning engine. We had a pretty hectic release this time due to the certain bugs and findings that we were able to now mitigate and fix as part of the engine itself. And Erwin is going to talk about the engine in the demo part slightly more detailed. And in a core object, which is the BNP site's core, or SharePoint core object, increasing the productivity of the developers, there hasn't been that much changes. But there's, for example, the request access property has been exposed, or easy way to manipulate that option using the core component. So you're able to enable or disable the request access email with an email in your sites. So it's taking advantage of the latest CSAM release for the SharePoint Online. On the PowerShell side, nothing that major. On the PMP Partner Pack side, significant updates on the setup guidance and the documentation. And it's also using the latest CSAM NuGet package. If I remember correctly, actually, the latest version of the PMP Partner Pack has not quite yet been released. It's going to be released tomorrow. Slightly depends on the timing perspective. We had quite a significant amount of community contributions. So Alexander, Bob German, Daniel, I saw Daniel at least in the call as well, Irvin, obviously, Frederick, Ivan, Ole, two Oles, Paolo, Pascal, Philip, Peter, Ruddy, Recha, Radon, Stefan, Thomas, and then there's a one person who didn't have a name within the GitHub profile. So that's like 25 people or 20 people contributing directly from a community side. And a majority of these were actually on the core component. So helping us to stabilize and increase the quality of the engine and the core component operations. And then from a Microsoft side, we have the typical team on the left side, which is essentially the people who we work on day-to-day basis with these larger customers on the transformational guidance and also the Office 365 development. And then three explicit, let's say, persons who did a additional contribution. So Eric Xu, Ivan Bondi, and Simon Yacker, who then haven't been kind of a, well, they're not part of our day-to-day people who we work with, but they've been doing significant contributions within the last month as well. So thank you everybody for your contributions, because really BNP is community-driven program, open source community, from the community for the community. And that's really, really important thing. I'm just checking the timing. I need to give guys time to do some demos today as well, and I do know that people are interested on a demo. So the March roadmap, quite quickly on that one. So over the provisioning engine, we don't have anything, let's say, major in the provisioning engine in the queue or in the roadmap, because we're getting to be on the status that we're already exposing all of the possible APIs and all of the possible settings, what we can do using the remote APIs. We're not looking into having any new CSAM releases by the March release, so that also means that there won't be that many changes within a core component. Same applies for the core component. We're looking into just doing bug fixes and also documentation improvements. So we're lacking slightly the documentation, which we need to get in a slightly better stage. PowerShell, same thing, bug fixes. On the samples and solution sites, we're really looking into more now on the Microsoft Graph, Office 365 API site. And then we are planning to do a consolidation and cleaning of the SharePoint add-ins. There's a, if you pull down the main PMP repo, there's like 60 or 80 individual samples, and some of them are extremely simple. So what we're looking into doing is combining these simple samples to a one larger SharePoint-driven SharePoint-targeted solution, which will show the basic API usage and all of that. The PMP tools, we're looking into getting that one off the ground, which is more for the IT pros and architects. So that's going to actually move forward within the next month as well. And that's more for the SharePoint on premises. So we're looking into having a set of scripts, set of tools, set of guidance. As an example, responsive UI package for SharePoint 2013 and SharePoint 2016. So there will be more in the underneath the BMP tool brand. There will be more stuff for targeted for on-premises. BMP Partnerback, small improvements, nothing major, but we're looking into expanding that one as well. And then we're looking into recording and sharing a small core component training package, which will be, I think it's an 8-module training package with the videos and some presentations, which will explain the value out of the BMP core component and how it can be used. So that's coming up. Well, it's planned to come up in the March timeframe. I'm not going to actually take more time on the overall discussions, and I want to give the stage for the other people who will be doing some demos, practical demos today. So there's Bert is going to talk about the unit tests in the BMP core component. Paula is going to talk about the graph example, which is now included in the BMP sample guidance, and Erwin is going to talk about the provisioning engine updates and more details. But Bert, you want to take it over?
Yes, thank you, Vesa. So I'm stealing your presentation.
Yep, feel free.
And while Skype is doing its work, so my name is Bert Jensen. I'm a service engineer in the SharePoint service engineering organization, or Office 365 organization, focused on giving our customers a good development experience and helping them transform the solutions into the cloud. Now, let's move on to the slides. I hope they move. Can you confirm, Vesa, that the slide moved?
Yep, moving on.
All right, super. So the core component is keeps on growing and growing. We have hundreds of extension methods, which kind of makes it necessary to have a proper way to test all the individual extension methods. And for that, we already have unit testing, which we have for quite a while. So we have almost 300 individual unit tests available. Now, up until now, we used to run those tests against just two environments, actually a SharePoint 2013 lab server and a regular tenant. And what we're now doing, and this is kind of, this session is about what we're doing right now and also kind of a glimpse in the future, we're extending our test environment's coverage. So to explain that, I want to give you like a view on how things work inside Microsoft. So when a product team makes a feature or fixes something, creates a new API, whatever that they do, they work in their team, the left side. And the first environment where their stuff gets visible is in what we call an EDOC environment, a dog food environment. And then things move to internal Microsoft Teams tenants, to MSIT. So we use our own stuff first as Microsoft internal IT. For everyone inside Microsoft. If you go more to the right, we go to the Canary. So the Canary is the first NDA environment where customers, partners can test their own bits. Finally, we have a first release, external preview, and the general availability. So what we'll do now is add additional test environments. So we have global availability. That's already available today. Canary is available today, running that. We're going to add soon testing at EDOC. So at the very early stages, we're going to test the PNP core library. And also for similar for EDOC, we have also DDoC, which is the kind of the dog food environment for DVNX customers. So with that, the idea of this is to really test as early as possible to detect potential issues with either with the core components, but also with the APIs or changes that we as Microsoft do that break things. So that's coming up. Gives you a view on where we want to test. Next slide gives you an overview of the environments. So we already talked about online in the previous slide. For on-premises, we today have two test environments up and running. It's a SharePoint 2013, a recent build, and a 2016 with a recent build. I put most between brackets because sometimes we don't immediately update the environment, but we try to keep them kind of up to date with what's being released to the public. Now, we have the environments. The other kind of side of the story is what are the test approaches that we're applying. And we have a twofold test approach. We test all the methods using credentials. So when you create a client context based on username plus password, that's one approach to test the methods. We also test using app only because there are some subtle differences between app only and using credentials. It's important to ensure that methods as much as possible methods work with both operations, app only and credentials. So that's why we have the double testing. Now, this is a very high level view on architecture. It's not really an architecture, but gives you like the big building blocks that we have. So today we have those two boxes, the SharePoint 2013 box and SharePoint 2016 box at the left side, running different kind of test sets against different environments. And all the test results end up in a SQL Azure database. So that's what we have today. In the future, we're going to build, in the near future, we're going to add the right side of the equation, which just gives you a basic UI to see the test results. So you can see all the test runs and drill down in the results and understand why a particular test failed, which is important for you because you as a community member, you can simply add your own tests to our PnP core library, which is something that we really would like to encourage. The more we can cover with unit testing, the higher quality we will get over time. So in this UI will give you an entry point to see the results. And we'll also build some alerting engine so we can ping some folks if something goes wrong so that they are informed and can take action. All right. A quick demo. Now, I'm not going to show you running unit tests because it's rather boring. I just want to quickly give you a view on where you can find the bits and bytes and also give you a view on the SQL Azure database. So let me present my screen. Can someone put in the chat window yes when they see the screen appearing?
I can even use audio for that.
Oh, yeah, you can.
Now it's loading, at least for me. Here we go.
All right, thank you. So our test approach is using MS Build. We're not using Visual Studio Test Automation today. We have a very lightweight system, which is based on MS Build, and we just run build scripts that do all the work. Now, the code to do that is available in the core folder. If you go to tools, there we have two tools, a document generator and a unit test. Now, this unit test project contains the runner. So we have a little exe that is kicks off MS Build with the proper parameters and kind of deals with storing the MS Build log into the database, etc., and kind of stops if it runs too long. So kind of very basic, lightweight test runner. Then we have here, not this one, the other one. That's with this long folder names. Here we go. Actual set of build extensions. So we have a set of MS Build tasks that are used to automate the testing, and we have a custom Visual Studio test logger that that when a test is running, instead of writing to the default location, it directly writes the test results into our SQL Azure database. Well, let's have a quick peek at the little script. Without going into the much detail, but I want to highlight some of the elements which can be interesting for your custom developments as well. So scrolling down a little bit, what you see here is we, this section, we are pulling down the repo, creating a fresh copy of the core library repository, pull it down. We then do builds of that one and kind of eventually kick off unit testing. But it would lead us too far to dive into the details, but if you're interested in test automation, we encourage you to have a look at this, at the custom tasks in there and how we deal with the testing. The net result of all of this is data ending up in a database. So we have a fairly simple database model today where we collect test results. So here in these tables where we have configuration. So each configuration, so remember that we talked about EDOC and SharePoint 2013 and testing them using app only, using credentials. So each configuration is stored and associated with a set of credentials and configuration properties. So properties and credentials. And at runtime, we just fetch the data from a database and then kind of generate the proper config files and kick off all the unit tests. So it's a fairly dynamic system. We can easily add tests and new environments. It's a matter of minutes to spin up new environments. And finally, we have some file tracking. This is work in progress, but the idea is we've received the ask from the community to be informed when, for example, Oslo.master or Seattle.master changes, because some people still have master pages and have a dependency on them. And that's why we built a generic file tracking capability that logs its data in the same database. Kind of in early stages, we're currently tracking Oslo Master and Seattle Master as test, but we still lack a UI and we lack the option for you to add additional files. But over time, you'll be able to just track any file in SharePoint that you think is important to follow. So at that point, you will be able to see when a file changes and what has changed between those files. All right, quick view on the test results. So when I run this first query, I'm just grabbing the latest 15 results. You see here interesting counts. Let me zoom in. You see the number of tests being run across different environments and the builds. So you see some newer builds which are not yet publicly available for you. Canary in this case, but we will aim at even testing against earlier builds being the EDOC. Now, this is useful data, but not without a UI. So I'm really looking forward to start building the UI to give everyone an access to this data. Finally, let's do a quick run of the configurations. Here you see the individual test configurations. So give a name in the VS build configuration, tenant URL. So all the properties needed to run the tests are there. And then we have the related authorization data, which of course is not showing passwords and app secrets, but you get the point. All right, a final query very quickly. Some time for the other folks as well. This is the file tracking. So we are tracking changes each run that we do. Let's zoom in. So for each run, so the run of last run, we checked also master, we grabbed the file hash, and if it's changed, we kind of flag it. We have another table where we keep the actual values of the files, so we can always kind of start comparing what has changed in between these individual we can detect what has changed. That's kind of the key thing here, and let you know over time. But again, we need to build the UI to do so. I think with that, Vesa, just for time's sake, let's switch to the next demo. So I think it was Erwin. Feel free to share the presentation. Steal the presentation, sorry.
Well, Paolo.
I think Paolo. It's actually Paolo next. Yes, that's true.
All right.
Quick comment on Bert on your presentation. This is a SQL database right now, but obviously, like you said, the UIs will be available at some point. So we have the data, we have automated daily builds.
Yes.
And there was a good comment from Rob that why are we calling this unit testing? Because it's actually integration testing, because we are testing against live SharePoint, which is technically correct.
Which is correct, yeah, but we're not some. We tend to be not academically correct sometimes, so
unfortunately,
forgive us
yes.
for that.
Yes. Maybe we should be changing practical. That to integration testing terminology so that we don't confuse the people, which is absolutely valid feedback from Rob. So
correct. All our testing happens against live environments.
And that's so also because we cannot do testing against the EDOC using the classical scenarios, because there's really no way of creating mocks and rhinos and whatever against the upcoming releases. That's impossible.
Theoretically, that can be done, but that would be an awesome effort, a lot of work, which doesn't kind of give the gains we need. I think there are other areas where we should spend our attention. So that's why we kind of kept it simple and just run against live environments, which is also interesting because you learn how things behave. How backends behave or often not behave.
Yes. We've been able to catch quite a few bugs before they go live, which is absolutely one of the objectives of this one as well. Good. Paolo, can you switch on?
Yes. Sure.
Steal the presentation.
Okay, I will do. Thank you, Viz, and thank you, Bert. I will share with you my screen, and please let me know when you will see it. Still loading, probably.
And
can you see it now?
Yep, I got it at least.
Okay, good, thank you. So, during these 10 or 15 minutes demo, probably 10 to keep some room for the latest demo from Erwin, we will see the latest Microsoft Graph demo that we released yesterday in the PNP repository. And right now you see the pointer in the PNP repo to this demo, which is Microsoft Graph Office 365 Generic under the samples folder. Well, basically, this demo, let me highlight that it's an under-construction demo, still under-construction, because I'm trying to improve it to add much more examples and capabilities, but it's a starting point to learn how the Microsoft Graph can be consumed from an Office 365 application perspective. So there you will find some examples about how to, first of all, do the authentication phase against Azure Active Directory in order to being able to consume the Microsoft Graph, as well as how to request access tokens and to use refresh tokens to refresh your access tokens while consuming the Microsoft Graph. And just after that, you will be able to see how to play with mailboxes, calendars, contacts, and stuff like that. So let me share with you the Visual Studio project, just to explain you how it is organized. And then we will see how we can use the Graph APIs from within .NET and from an ASP.NET MVC application like the one I'm showing you. So first of all, because I decided to create an Office 365 application, which is an MVC ASP.NET application, I have to point you to the Upstart folder in my Visual Studio project. Project, which is interesting because we have the startup authentication class in which we handle the dynamics and the mechanics of the Open ID Connect and the Open Authorization protocols in order to get an authorization code from Azure Active Directory and to create and to request an access token to Azure AD in order to consume the Microsoft Graph. So the first key point of interest for you is the authorization code received event that you have in the startup class, in which you will use and you can use the Azure Active Directory Authentication Library, also known as ADIL, which is available as a NuGet package. And through ADIL and this authorization code received event, I simply build an authentication context object, which will target my tenant using a cache, which is just for the sake of simplicity, a cache that will cache authorization access tokens and refresh tokens in a session-based cache. In a real enterprise-level and scalable solution, you should instead use something based on a SQL database or on the Redis cache of Azure or something that is really scalable. This solution is a simple one, self-consistent, and I decided to just use an easy session-based cache handler. And just after that, I request an access token, and I acquire an access token through Azure AD using ADIL, providing the authorization code that I get back from Azure AD when I do authentication. That is something that happens whenever you start a new application and you have to authenticate against Azure AD, as we explained in the webcast that we shared last week about OAuth and OpenID Connect. Just after that, I will be ready to consume all the APIs that I want to use through the Microsoft Graph simply by making HTTP requests against the endpoint of the Microsoft Graph. Well, what is the endpoint of the Microsoft Graph? It is an HTTPS based endpoint, which is graph.microsoft.com. Let me show you what is the URL, https://graph.microsoft.com. V1 for the RTM version that right now we have for the Microsoft Graph. And as you can see from my browser, you're able to query the $metadata endpoint URL just to have a look at the available entities and actions through the version 1.0 of the Microsoft Graph. Well, what I did in this sample is just to create a bunch of utility classes that will help you to properly create the HTTP requests targeting the Microsoft Graph. So, for example, if I go back to my project and I show you the home controller of my MVC application, as you can see here, in the index action, I have just the Microsoft Graph Helper class with a make get request for string for a specific URL, which is the URL of the current user, so me, in the Microsoft Graph version 1.0. Under the cover of this method, I have an helper class. Of course, in a real enterprise level solution, probably you will be, you will like to create a fluent API to have a better developer experience while writing your code. In this sample, I focused on the invocation of the methods and of the actions available through the Microsoft Graph, and I'm not trying to provide you an out-of-the-box SDK or library ready to go. But here you can find the make get request for string method, which internally uses a make HTTP request internal method, which simply is a private one, which simply built an HTTP request against the target endpoint, having the method to execute against the endpoint, the request URL. If we want to accept a specific kind of response, if we have any kind of specific content that we want to send to the target endpoint in order to consume that specific service or action, and eventually, if we have a content, we also do provide the content type of the content that we are sending, for example, in a post or in a put HTTP request against the Microsoft Graph API. We also have a predicate which can be used to retrieve the typed result of the request so that under the cover this method will, first of all, get an access token or refresh an access token through ADIL using the Azure AD library, and then it will create an HTTP client object, and by using at the low level the HTTP client object will create a request which will use the bearer authorization header, for example, in order to provide the access token within the authorization of the request, as well as will set up the request content, if any. So if we have a content, we can define and we can serialize as a JSON request the complex object that we can provide to the target endpoint. And at the very end, we fire a request in order to get back a result. And in case of a successful request, we will get back through the predicate that we provided the real result of our request. So that, for example, if I play this application and if I show you how it behaves when I invoke the home controller, first of all, I will have to authenticate against Azure AD, as I told you, in order to get back an authorization code and to get an access token to consume the Microsoft Graph. And hopefully pretty soon Azure AD will ask me to authenticate. And here I am. I will provide my own credentials to Azure AD. I will get back an authorization code. My startup class will be wake up by the response coming from Azure AD. And pretty soon I will be in the home page of my controller. Now, if I put a breakpoint here in the home controller and I refresh the page, you will see that while invoking this make get request for string method, I will get back a JSON response, which can be visualized in Visual Studio using the JSON visualizer. And as you can see, this is my current user in my current development tenant. Well, because in order to consume the Microsoft Graph API, we basically need to make a bunch of HTTP requests against the target endpoint. And we will have some time to provide some JSON serialized inputs. And we will quite often get back JSON serialized objects. What I did in my demo was to simply get all the entities defined in the metadata XML that we can get for free from the Microsoft Graph online documentation. And I defined a bunch of .NET types in the models folder, in which you can see how it is defined: a drive object, which is a OneDrive for Business Drive, or a user object, which is exactly the user I'm getting back when I'm requesting for myself for the me endpoint, or a mail message, and stuff like that. So you will find a bunch of types which define what are the types that we can handle from an high level perspective in .NET in order to consume the graph. So, for example, just to show you how we can use this kind of entities. If I go to the files controller class that I have for the demo related to consuming the OneDrive for Business, I can, for example, make a request to get the user personal drive, which will be just an helper method that will give me back through a get request for string, a JSON object that I will deserialize into a drive object. And then I will be able to consume that type object from a .NET perspective. The same story can be applied to any kind of typed response that I can get back through the Microsoft Graph. So if you will go through all these samples that you will find, and you will see the web application provide us a set of examples divided into categories like mail, calendar and contacts, user and groups, and files, there you will find one controller, an MVC controller for each family of functions and services, and you will be able to see how to make the HTTP request and how to get back the proper JSON response in order to play reading and writing contents through the Microsoft Graph into your Office 365 tenant. Of course, I have just 10 minutes, so I cannot go too much deep on these kind of contents, but this is just to give you the idea of what you will find in the samples if you will download them and play with them. I think I need to leave the stage to Erwin for the latest news of the PNP provisioning engine. So if there are any questions, I'm here. Otherwise, I will leave the stage to Erwin.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paolo. So still over, Erwin.
And I'm switching now to my screen. And everything should, if everything goes okay, you should see a template. Can take a bit.
And we can, I can say that. And then yep. Notepad, the every developer is best.
Don't you love it?
So, exactly.
Don't you love Notepad? Yeah, there is no life without Notepad. So two things I'm going to talk about today. Two biggest changes to the provisioning engine. One is localization, and the other one is the support for publishing. So let me start with localization first. So what you're looking at right now is a very simple template, and in there I have one list instance being, where's my mouse? There. One list instance here. List instance here. And what I did is I changed the title and the description to be a token. It's a new token we introduced. It's the resource token. And the resource token allows you to do localization. So basically how this works is when we provision the template, we will look for a value in a text field, like being a title or a description or any other text field, basically on an entity. And if the token is a resource token, we will look up that resource in the resource files that you specified in the same template. You do that up here in the localizations area. So here you can specify, for instance, for English, that use this resource file. And for Dutch, you use, which is the locale ID 1043, you use that resource file. So basically what happens is that when we provision the template, we check out what the language is of the web, and we set the default value for that list instance to the corresponding value in the resource file. So if we're going to look in the resource file itself, I have them here. I hope you can see this. It's my resolution is pretty high.
I can, at least.
Good. So this Dutch version. So I have two keys here, context list name and context list description. And if you don't read Dutch, this basically is the Dutch representation of the English versions being context and then description for the context list. So I have two resource files, one for English, one for Dutch. So in the template itself, I specify these tokens here. I can use them everywhere, but there's a little twist, is that if a property on an object that we create supports what we call a resource property, then we set both values. So then we set both the Dutch and the English value to the property. And if you have a web in SharePoint that supports multiple languages, it will switch to that language then for you. So you don't have to do that. But in the demo, I will only actually show you two different webs, both one in English and one in Dutch. So this is my template. So I have two sites. And if I go to the sites here, this is the English site. This is the Dutch site. And there's just out-of-the-box sites, nothing specific there. And of course, I'm going to use PowerShell. But this functionality obviously also works from a coder perspective. SharePoint.com. So it's new. This is the English site. SPO provisioning template resource test. So just one list in here, so it should be pretty fast. In the meantime, I can already go to the site. It's already publishing, provisioning the list. The list should already be there. We go to the English site. And there is my context list called context. So if I go to PowerShell again and connect to the Dutch site and apply the same template, and in the browser, I go to the Dutch site. There it says contact persona. So it's the same template, multilingual. Very simple to use, very easy to extend. You can, as I said, if the property, like for instance, like lists and a few other artifacts in SharePoint support these like resource properties, we will set them. So you can actually have them in a single site still being multilingual. So that's quite an interesting change, I think, that we introduced in the bridging engine of yesterday's release, basically. Another one is what we have been working on and has been giving us headaches every now and then, is the ability to actually handle publishing. So what you can do now is if I connect to another site. And this is a team site with the publishing feature activated. And I say get SPO provisioning template. And I'm outputting that to the file here. And I say include native publishing files and persist publishing files. This will take a bit longer because through all the artifacts, but what it's doing right now is, as normal, it generates a provisioning template, but it will include the page layouts and the corresponding content types, etc., etc., etc. And because I said persist, it will store them in the template, but it will also download them to your file system. And this is a two-way. So we have been successfully being able to take an existing site collection and extract a template from that one where the publishing feature was active, and then move all the publishing functionality over to another site collection. So we have a full round trip now also with publishing. There we go, it's doing the publishing right now. And a slight interesting side fact is that we can do this, but Safe Sense template doesn't. Again, a reason to use the provisioning engine, I would say. Almost there.
You can dance for us, Irvin, at this point.
Yeah, I want that. I want Paolo to dance.
Everybody can imagine how Irvin is dancing right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Or as you did in Finland, you jumped on the table. But I'm not sure if tables like that if I do that.
I know to do that every now and then.
It's pretty busy right now. There's a lot of content. There we go. So if I look in the folder right now, you see all the layout files are there. And if I go into the template, open that one that I just generated, and we're jumping to the files section, you will see that all the layout pages, with all the layout pages, yeah, with the, all the properties are there. So we all extract all that information, it's all there, and allows you to do a round trip.
And those who couldn't quite follow up on what are we doing, so we're taking advantage of the BMP core, the provisioning engine, which you can utilize using just a provider-hosted application or an Azure website or whatever, or using the PowerShell. The PowerShells are extremely powerful towards Office 365 sites as well.
Yep. One more thing I want to actually address, that's something we introduced only on the PowerShell part, but it's very easy to replicate also from a code perspective. It's something we introduced, yes, last month already, but I found it very useful, and Paolo and many other people with me, is that if you do a get SPO provisioning template, there is this handless property where you can say, I only want you to extract the homepage, for instance. Now, what we also do now is instead of handless, you also have an exclude handless. You say, I want to do everything but the homepage.
And Irvin, quickly on that one, I think, because there are people who might not be quite aware of this one. Why would you do that? Why would you just export the theming settings, or why would you export the one content type settings or list settings?
There might be, the stuff might already be there in the site. You might have, you might want to split up your templates in separate templates to create multiple templates that you apply in a certain order, or yeah, all kinds of flexible things you can do with that. Speed up testing. Does my artifact get provisioned correctly? Just simple, extract the template, but only those artifacts that you're interested in.
True. And I think the typical use case would be something like we have a standardized set of document libraries which we want to have in every single, every single team site, whether we're creating a collaboration site, and you can just extract that configuration, content type, site columns, and all of that, which is relevant for the libraries, and then reapply that against existing sites, for example, which will update the existing sites as well if they're not there, because the delta handling will take care of it.
Exactly. To answer Roy Don's question, no display templates. That was it for me.
Good. We have 2 minutes, which isn't that much. I'm going to quickly switch back on the slides, and we can close up the call. I don't have a hard stop, at least right now, so we can actually go through if there's any random question, immediate questions. But also want to use the Yammer group in general for questions, because otherwise we don't scale that well. One-to-one emails, one-to-one questions are always really, really hard. One thing what I wanted to quickly mention, thank you, Jeremy, what's Yammer? We're looking into having a more structural way of getting community people more involved within the BNP. So obviously right now people can already contribute by having a look on the issues and contributing by testing something or contributing by submitting samples. So we're looking into growing and having a more, let's say, systematic way of having specific teams for specific sections in the future. And we're going to talk about that one more in the March call timeframe. But we're absolutely interested on getting additional people closely involved for the work what we do, because you people in the community who work with the customers, you do have the most expertise also on the challenges what people are facing. So it's not like the Microsoft should be the one who's telling this is how everything will be done, because the people who sit in the Richmond have, in some cases, have never seen a customer. So they don't actually know how customers are even using, in certain cases, the SharePoint or other technologies. So therefore, the contributions from a community are extremely vital for the BNP program. But we'll come back on that one. And a small reminder on that survey, which is coming up relatively soon. So we absolutely want to have your feedback on the value of the BNP. Is it actually worthwhile? Do you see a future on this model? Because obviously we want to make sure that there's no, Microsoft does not have any interest on investing on BNP if the community doesn't like what we're doing. So we need to show some metrics around the program as well. So that's a heads up on that one, and we'll do a communication on that one. But I think that's it. We're hitting the timing. Let's continue the discussion in the Yammer, and let's keep on contributing and using the BNP within your projects. And please give us feedback on the stuff what we're doing. So thank you everybody who's joining, who joined, and let's see hopefully within at least the next monthly community call related on what was released in the March release. Thank you.